So, good morning. I'm Victoria Grandery. I'm a senior technical account manager at Human Security. And to give you a bit of context, Human Security is a bot mitigation solution to help keep the internet human. In today's world, there's more and more cyber attacks, and 77% of those attacks, criminals are using automated scripts or bots to leverage those attacks. So that's why there's an opportunity for us to help fight bots and keep the internet, you know, real, whether it's music streaming, banking, just about anything where someone can impersonate a human.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Pilchinski, Vice President of Strategy at SoundCloud. Essentially, I look after the creator economy at SoundCloud. I used to be the head of content economics. Essentially, everything that we're talking about here, spin fraud, affects everyone, and most notably affects artists. And the core of what SoundCloud is, and many, many platforms, and platforms like Pandora and others, there is no industry, and there is, even more importantly, no artistry if there is rampant fraud, or even if there's just inauthentic activity, which I'm sure we'll go into much more detail, but it's being someone on the industry side of things and also coming from a family of musicians, there's a lot of drive in making this a much more public conversation. So I'm very excited to be a part of this today and speaking with all of you. Passing it to George.
Good morning. I'm George White. I'm Senior Vice President of Music Licensing for SiriusXM. I'm responsible for music licensing and royalties at Pandora and SiriusXM. And I've got some interesting background. I'm a music industry lifer and have been around for a while, but a couple of things that I think made spin fraud much, a really, really relevant problem for me is early on in my days at Warner Music Group, I'd worked on online anti-piracy and seen a lot of, you know, technical exploits damaging the industry, and had worked on an RIAA committee that was specifically focused on online anti-piracy. So I had some experience with seeing people come together to fight to fight against a problem in the industry. In a former life as well, I worked for Billboard. And so I'm very, very conscious of the charts and the role that they play in the music industry and the importance of their integrity, and was very cognizant of the impact that spin fraud has on that integrity.
Great, thank you. So I think I'd like to start with a question, and Mike, I'll start with you. What worries you the most about spin fraud's effects on the music industry?
I think what I was alluding to earlier is essentially artistry. The industry is designed to be reactive. So even, George, what you were talking about, Billboard, commercial charting, finding artists, signing artists, developing artists, the industry is very reactive. And if the industry is looking at an artist or a scene, whatever we're talking about in music, if it starts with inauthenticity, everything down the line is inauthentic. Everything is being impacted in that way that the industry then values inauthenticity. So what suffers the most in that, and even for music lovers, is artistry. People are competing, even utilizing inauthenticity and fraud as a way to get coverage, fame, charted, whatever it is. So not to move immediately to a more philosophical point, but it really is about artistry and the potential damage that it does depending on what part of the industry we're talking about. But streaming specifically, it's a volume game. And I think that's another thing that it worries me to see over time how much quantitative value is valued as opposed to qualitative. And we're talking about music. So that's definitely kind of at the heart of that without going too much into the technical.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because when we're thinking of artistry, you know, we can get stuck in the numbers and the stats and the money involved. We can't forget the fact that it's people's actual art that's suffering. Somebody else is getting expense.
And I agree completely with the fact that ultimately the people who suffer from spend fraud are artists. I don't have to tell anybody on the stage, and I don't think I have to tell anybody in this audience, that the music industry doesn't actually have a stellar reputation for honesty and transparency overall. And my big concern about spend fraud is it further erodes what little confidence there is in the transparency and honesty in the industry. So I talked about the impact on charts already. You know, that's sort of obvious that if the charts are inflated by spend fraud, then people's perception of what's actually popular and what is meaningful to the culture is false and damaged. And you know, I think back to when SoundScan was introduced in 1992. What a revelation it was for people to see just how popular country and hip hop were as a genre. And you know, if with the rates of spend fraud that we believe are present today in the industry, I think we're back to a place where we don't really have an accurate perception of what's really meaningful to the culture, the same way when, you know, the only measure of popularity was how many units shipped out the door. We didn't really know what people really were listening to and wanting to hear. So the other, and it's a self-perpetuating thing now, if you think about how much of plays on streaming services are influenced by algorithms. The algorithms are picking up on false flag data as the information that's coming in and parroting that back out. So the algorithms themselves are propagating the problems. And it's just the last point is, you know, sort of that's distortion of actual real music. There's the even larger underbelly of the problem is stuff that's not even music at all. It's a huge criminal enterprise of people just uploading bogus content to services and then creating bots to get royalties out of this bogus content. And this is an issue that ultimately just damages artists. It takes share away from the artists whose activity was legitimate, and it drives revenue to who knows what criminal enterprise and what that's actually funding. So this is a really bad and damaging problem for the industry.
So the answer of what worries you the most about it is pretty broad.
Can I add, I wanted to add another point of view as well of like the end user, so the fans, the people who log into, you know, all these platforms, Pandora, SoundCloud, and all these music platforms to stream the music that they want to listen to, they want to support their artists, as we're saying. But if you're going on a platform and you don't know what's, you know, human versus bot, is the artist being recommended to me, someone being recommended to me because I actually, it's the same kind of style that I listen to, or is it because that person was using spin fraud to bump their numbers and become more popular, but it's not really relevant to what I want to listen to? And so then you have an experience that, as we're saying, is skewed, because what is recommended, what's coming up on the charts, is not really truthfully, authentically, like what people really like, because if you looked at the quality of the data, you'd see maybe some other artists popping up rather than the ones who were able to pay for or afford spin fraud services. And I think, you know, the end users help put money in the artist's pocket. So if they stop going to the platforms, then you have artists who don't have a fan base showing up at the shows or listening to X numbers of playlists on a daily basis.
Yeah, I agree. And also, to bring it more personal, I think part of this problem is it's annoying to me to think that some of my radio stations would be impacted by somebody else running a computer system in some other country.
I think it's worthwhile for the audience just to give some idea of like just the scope of the activity. At one point when we saw this problem really starting to take off and we dug in to combat it, we were seeing tens of millions of attempted logins per day by bots. The number of requests exceeded 500 million in a day. This is the majority of the traffic on a service the size of Pandora.
Yeah, and we were discussing earlier how many years worth of active computing power would that be?
So if you think about if you think about 1 billion seconds is about 36 years. So 500 million is 18 years worth of computing power being used in a day to service bots.
It's a crazy statistic and a crazy amount of fake inputs.
Yeah.
That sort of leads me into my next question, and Victoria, I think this one would be a good one for you to go into. What sorts of methods and motivations have you found are behind these attacks?
Sure. So motivations, it usually comes back to money. Cyber criminals are always going after the money. If a system is built in a way that it can be abused and the economics of it can be abused, we've been in the ad fraud business for about 10 years. Wherever a criminal can make money, they will go there. So in this case, they've noticed that, if they can do plays, likes, comments, and help bump up royalties, there's money to be made there. In terms of the methods, so cyber criminals go from unsophisticated folks to very sophisticated people. Depends how much money they have to do the attacks and their experience. But if we start by the unsophisticated areas, just a pure data center with a bunch of devices that are going to start trying to do a bunch of logins that are going to be somewhat easily able, we can easily detect with human, because it either all comes from one specific region or geolocation or IP. So they really haven't put that much effort into obfuscating themselves. They're just trying to do as much abuse as possible before they get blocked. If you go to more sophisticated, you have, these days there's a lot of data breaches. There's a lot of data available that's been stolen of emails. So what attackers will do is they'll pick up a data dump and then start trying to test those emails and passwords against Pandora, SoundCloud platform, and see which ones they can get in. And once they can get in, they've hijacked someone's account. Maybe that person won't figure out right away that they've been hijacked, but they'll be able to send bots through that account. And let's say I'm listening to my music one day, but then the next day, the bot goes and does its activity, and that just shows up in the data as just me having abnormal amounts of plays on certain days and just a normal rate, and which can make it hard sometimes to detect if they become very, very good at understanding what's the average number of songs a person will listen to be able to hide kind of between the normal in the baseline. Another type, which I think is really important, is creating fake accounts. We help, protect account creation at Human, because we've seen that there's a lot of accounts being created just for the purpose of at some point launching kind of a spin fraud attack. Those accounts can go dormant for a couple of months and then suddenly wake up, and they've been created a while back. And we see that those accounts sometimes are created by just a single device, but that person is able to create, hundreds of accounts that they're then gonna awaken at the moment where they need the spins to hit a certain type of content from a specific artist, for example, for promotional purposes.
Yeah, thank you. That's a great context. I think when we've been working on this panel, one thing that you mentioned, some of the other uses of bots outside of the music industry, and I feel that those sorts of stories are interesting because it adds a different perspective, that this problem that we're having is a small part of a larger problem with all technology right now.
For sure. Bots are pretty much prevalent everywhere. I don't know if you've noticed at some point, for example, it was really hard to book your vaccines. Vaccines are free, everyone should be able to go. There were actually bots just scheduling appointments, and there were no shows. So then what you end up happening is people have to throw out you know, the little files of vaccine because no one showed up to the appointment. And what you end up doing is keeping a population of, in this case, like the US, unvaccinated for a longer period of time, which can contribute to a longer health crisis. And that was like something that nation states can do. You also have another example. I don't know if anyone has thought about, you know, tickets to concerts. Everyone, we're talking about the artist music industry, like everyone wants to go see their favorite artist at a concert, but you don't really want to pay $300 for that ticket that you, when you see the first price, it was probably $25. It happens that it's been a bot that, you know, bought that ticket, bought a bunch of tickets and decided that because that was going to sell out, they can resell it at a higher price.
Yeah, yeah, great, great perspective as well. When we're looking at the methods and motivations, again, going back to the music industry, George or Mike, do either of you want to comment on what you've learned trying to figure out the motives and, or the methods and motivations as to like why people are doing it in music?
So in addition to the monetization and doing it for royalties and that whole game, there's also vanity, which is really interesting because even if there's this means of trying to get this inauthentic activity and going to the top of our discussion, talking about how that affects artistry, the irony is that even if those are that are hiring bots or working with bots, to have that scale of vanity may be an on-platform chart or a commercial chart, you're literally working against yourself because that artist, you're creating a zero-sum game because essentially you want label attention or you want, you know, audience attention, but you're building it on inauthenticity, which means that you won't sell tickets, you won't sell merch. Every aspect of a career in music is inauthentic, with that being the inauthentic start of how you're being measured. So there's a huge vanity aspect to as well, which you always see it. You see it come about filtered, and sometimes even if there is this vanity kind of behavior, you just see that there never is a return, right, and it just dies out.
It's not very useful to know that all of your users are located in a warehouse in upstate New York.
Exactly.
For me, the scale, just the overall scale of people just doing it as a pure criminal enterprise, just creating bogus accounts, creating bogus art name, artist names around bogus content, and then you know, an army of bots to drive royalty. The scale of that activity, you know, really is just was plain frightening to me. It's like, all right, there's really a lot of reward for this, yeah, and really heightened, like, my feeling of like we need to really work to take the reward out of this.
Yeah, great point. On beginning to work on it, that actually leads really well into the next question. Why did you begin collaborating with others on this problem? Because I think this is a problem that a lot of companies have looked at themselves once they realize they have a problem. But I think what, you know, we're trying to get out of this conversation and starting to develop on our own is we need to talk about.
Yeah, so the thing for me is knowing that, well, we weren't seeing the same level of activity on the Pandora servers for a while, but it was clearly going on somewhere else. So I knew it was migrating from one service to another. So that naturally led me to think, well, we should really be sharing information to prevent this from happening across different services. And then the second piece was, well, what we really need is a partnership, not just between services, so the same actors can't just hop from one service to another, but we really need a deeper partnership around this problem industry-wide between services and content owners and distributors. Because at the end of the day, you've got to cut off the financial motivation. You've got to make it difficult for people to profit from this. And that's something that really has to happen at the distributor side, because that's where the money is flowing to. So if people come on with, you know, it's not that easy to establish payment credentials. And if distributors, content owners are diligent about banning the same payment credentials from coming back into the system after legitimate use, I think you can make it much more expensive and much more difficult. And, you know, unfortunately, you're not going to stop the criminal enterprise, but you're going to push it in other directions.
Yeah. And what made you want to reach out to...
SoundCloud in particular was interesting in that regard because they have both a they have a service and a service that implements user-generated content, so there's a lot less friction for getting content there, and they're also a content distributor. So I knew that they were going to be facing the problem from both sides and would be in a best position to share learning with us. And somebody who I knew would be able to benefit from the learning that we're having and the information that we could share.
It also helped that we both work with Human.
Human among others, but yes, and we shared an ally.
Definitely. And maybe just to quickly add to this too is another way that SoundCloud looks at itself. And speaking of being an open platform, is for an open platform for anyone to use and for scenes and communities to thrive on it. And I feel like the bigger topic here is we're all playing a part in being defenders of authentic culture. And I think that's something that's very close to heart for SoundCloud in particular to be part of this. Because even if you find these vectors, even if you find these, you know, like you mentioned, George, you find a vector, you find the bad actors, you shut them down, they'll move to another platform. So with any kind of activity like that, you need a network, you need partnership to all be aware of what's happening to just really clamp down on that. But also with the integrity of knowing why we're also doing it outside of the pure economics and all of that, it's literally for artists to make enough money, especially those that are developing or just starting out. That's something that literally is being diluted with all the fraud. Because in terms of, for anyone that's not aware of how streaming economics work, it's one big pool of money. So in the US here, it's just one big pool of money. All of the subscriber money is also pulled in and pushed into that pool. And it's a pro rata model. So you essentially cut that pie based on the volume of play. So going back again, we're talking volume. Again, volume. But every single one of us in this room, when we're subscribing, because you're doing it by a play count of volume, there's money of yours that's going to artists you never even listened to, number one. And number two, there's someone else here that could be listening to hundreds and thousands of more plays than you, which means they're more valuable economically than you. And that, again, going back to that concept of defending authentic culture is, how do we model this, number one, push back against fraud? And number two, I'm just totally going to plug right now, is we developed a user-centric model that actually works in a very different way than the pro rata model, which essentially is that $10 or 10 euro that you pay will only go to those artists that you listen to. But it also does inherently cap fraud, because you're only responsible for that $10. You can't influx plays into that big pot of money and siphon and push that economic pie in a direction. So going back to that network principle of all of us trying to partner with others, it has to be a unified front of not one, two, however handful of solutions. It literally has to be a unified front of tending to this bigger problem before we can even begin to innovate.
Actually, I just thought of this. There's that user-centric views of looking at charting also like would be much more interesting to see how many individual users were listening rather than how many spins were being gotten.
It's going back to what you mentioned earlier is the fan concept. Someone can be a fan of music and maybe they don't have enough time, they listen to a limited amount of plays, but they've been living with one record the entire month, and that's all they've been playing, or a few handful select artists. That's fandom, irrespective of volume count. So to your point, and that's where we're trying to push the industry from our side into the fan economy, where we reward fandom irrespective of the volume or the or an artist's audience size. That's the other thing too. Artist has a smaller audience, maybe size, but has a large, expanse, dedicated fan base within that audience. With fraud, it's an incredible, unsurmountable uphill battle, let alone before even going to the user-centric concept. So again, going back to that culture aspect, how can we defend authentic culture with all that we're talking about?
Yeah, sort of artists are fan-centric royalties or listener-centric royalties has often been posed as a solution to sort of restoring opportunities for the artist middle class, for, you know, people who have passionate but niche fan bases. But there's an obvious benefit for combating and limiting the financial rewards for spend fraud.
Do you think it eliminates it? Because I know that's something that you've worked on.
In terms of the subscription side, pretty much eliminates it, caps it, and you have no bot influx into the larger pie of money. I mean, there's the technical aspect I think you touched on. There's the potential of hacking accounts, but that's a much, much more stringent, difficult barrier to do fraud with that. But and even in advertising.
But it changes the attack factor also.
But it changes the attack factor, yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily eliminate it.
Yeah. It's nothing can ever be the silver bullet, because there's just this constant shift of learning what the vector was as a bad actor, and then figuring out, okay, how can I amend this to figure out how I can continue doing this?
Yeah, that is the fascinating part of the problem, and is you never really can feel like you've solved it, because somebody's learning from what you're doing to defend yourself.
Yeah, but exactly. I guess like one thing we try to do as well as like deception is it's kind of a whack-a-mole game, bots. Like you hit them someplace, you block them, they're going to learn, they're going to try to come through another vector, like even when you change the models. What you can do is, even though they can feel like they're hitting a wall, you don't have to explicitly explain or say how you're blocking them, or and try to make it, I guess, chop them into ways of, for them to understand that they might not figure out how they're being blocked or how they're not monetizing on their attacks. You know, there's more and more articles about this, about spin fraud. People are talking more and more about it. The same thing about security. There's more and more security tools, but at some point, you have to be smarter than the fraudster. And I think, like, when you have also alliances, you can trade, like, you can share, you know, information, best practices, solutions that have worked of, like, oh, well, we did this and this happened, and maybe you want to do the same thing. And that's what we've seen of, like, even having you guys communicate. It's been, like, being a catalyst for that, it's super important to see how, like, our data and our research can help enable those decisions, yeah, and those changes.
I will also add on that collaboration front, it's very validating also to not just be the one guy who's sitting there staring at spreadsheets feeling like you're losing your mind. You know, other people are doing that also.
Is that how you feel, Josiah?
Sometimes.
Every Monday?
Yeah, maybe a... Sometimes you feel like, am I getting really paranoid, or is that just, no, I'm getting paranoid. George, what about you? How do you feel the collaboration has benefited you in your work on this problem?
It has been great to confirm, first of all, to confirm that the things that we're seeing are not unique to us. There's no reason to expect that they were, but that's certainly been reassuring to see that we are in this together. You've been working on the front lines, and you're probably in the best position to give specific examples, but there have been now numerous examples where we've been able to detect fraud before it's happened because of the information sharing. This is all an expensive and time-sucking endeavor, fighting spend fraud. And so the collaboration more than anything makes it take less time, and time is the most precious resource.
Yeah, because I was going to add, like, attackers or fraudsters have as much time as they need. And that's usually how they win, is because they have so much time to be able to think about it, think about the model. And that's where, when you're on the defensive side, you lose if you're not working together. It's because you have so many resources and, like, a bunch of decisions to make about your business. Whereas if you start sharing, that time kind of shrinks, and then you can get on to, I'm going to say, the more important decision-making.
The only way that the industry will successfully limit this problem, obviously I think we all agree that it's not going to go away. It will continue to evolve. But in order to minimize the problem and make it one that everyone can collectively deal with, we're going to have to collaborate. We're going to have to collaborate at the service level. But we're also going to have to collaborate with our content provider partners, and establish trust that we're both working to eliminate it, and establish an understanding that it's damaging us both.
In order to build that trust and to build that collaboration, you've had to have a lot of tough conversations. I know all three of you have had to have those sorts of conversations with different players. What sorts of problems have you run into that you've had to figure out? And I guess I'd probably start, I'll start with you, Mike.
Even just saying the term fraud out loud, I think even as simple as that, getting everyone comfortable with talking about this, because finger pointing can just lead to nowhere, and having constructive discussions, even when there's sensitive discussions about it, that literally we find something and we just want to understand the root of it. And even something like that with, whoever we're partners with, content partners, management, whatever, whoever that may be, having the ability to have these conversations on such a subject and be reasonable about it, I think at the front line of it right now, I feel like, that just having that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fraud thing is something I think every organization has to deal with, because there's always competing entities within an organization that maybe don't want to use that word as freely, so it happens.
And it's, the other big challenge is just a resource challenge. It's getting the necessary budget to allocate to this. It's at least on the subscription side, services aren't paying out any more money because someone's committing fraud on the subscription side. It's just diverting who that money goes to. So making sure that the company understands, that this is a real problem for both sides. Obviously, at Pandora, we're protecting the integrity of our ad sales. So that's very important. So, I have, and SoundCloud also has, we share that in common, that we need to protect the integrity of our ad sales operations. Otherwise it's just additional money that has to be spent that further reduce margins in a business that already has wafer thin margins.
And I guess, like, from humans' point of view, the top conversations is coming to platforms like you and kind of showing the visibility that we have on what's happening, and the data, and being able to say, hey, we're seeing suspicious behavior. And luckily, Josiah, you've been very open, because usually what we find confirms what you've been finding. So I don't think we've had an incident where it's like, hey, there's this big surprise, something new. But it's trusting, like, the detection capabilities of, we have metrics, we see traffic, we see how it evolves, and we help our clients, understand what's happening. And it's really great to work with people who are not, I want to say, dubious of our findings, and who have learned to trust our, I would say, accuracy as we've moved along, because we've been able to prove that.
Why do you think people have been dubious, or why do you think you're in that issue?
I think people are dubious because it's like opening a, sorry for the pun, Pandora's box.
I haven't heard that one.
because people don't see it as, don't think it's a problem at first. So a lot of people don't see bots as a problem. Once they start gaining visibility, there's that moment of like, oh, wait. And then they need to quantify, like, how big is this problem? How is it impacting their bottom line? Because at some point it's like, what are these bots doing to abuse my user experience, and where are they taking money away from, and where is that money going in their pockets instead of who, like the artist's pocket? And I think like it's also about the people. Like the more you see people have like the best interests of the artist in hand or whoever the end user is, there's that moves much faster. And I think the success also is having people involved in the fight and not just waiting for a solution to happen.
Right, so maybe dubious but also overwhelmed.
Yeah, resourcing is a huge problem.
Right. I think, I know in one of our meetings, Mike, you had mentioned the word that sometimes you bring it up with people and they just say it's complicated, it's too complicated, and that's sort of the immediate reaction. It's like, okay, somebody else needs to figure this out, this is too much.
For someone that personally I really like pushing boundaries and I have a hard time with no, that whole concept of saying complex goes back to what we were saying earlier, that even when we talk to partners, distributors, managers, it's just having that conversation to get to the root of something. Like if we can just level set that, I think everyone feels more comfortable, like the many, many conversations and calls we've had over the past couple of months. Friendly faces help, but I think that comfort of knowing that we're in the same boat and willing to work out of this problem, and you know, not everyone finds this as an incredibly passion-driven subject, but if you really think of the root of it, who's actually being affected? If anyone actually gives a shit about music, you do care, and that's the thing that I feel like we continue need to keep educating everyone, especially in the crazy accelerated space of music in general, that, complex, that, yeah, the industry itself is one of the most complex, especially in the right space, it's one of the most complex industries. So if you're in it already, you chose to be in this game.
Yeah, how have you overcome that?
I was just going to say, listen, it's a complex problem, but that sort of emphasizes the importance of coming out, talking transparently about what's going on and what's needed to address the problem, and also to educate all the stakeholders. It's a shame that there aren't artists in the audience today, because it really, at the end of the day, that's who's hurt. And so artists, part of the solution is artists must demand from their labels and distributors that they're playing an active role in discouraging this activity, because it's taking money right out of their pocket.
Yeah, great point. Have you, when it comes to that discussion of distributors and labels, I mean, obviously those are tough stakeholder conversations to have. What sorts of things have you found they are, makes them more interested in solving the problem?
I think everyone has an interest in solving the problem because of just that, right? It's some are more motivated than others. Obviously, small independent distributors have, I appreciate the difficulty of that business. They have wafer thin margins that they're making in distributing, some of them, approaching zero. I'm thinking about people like DistroKid. It's a tough business. And so, they're in the business of removing the friction from getting content onto services. So I appreciate that. But they are also in the artist service business, and this does damage their artists. So I think that's an argument that resonates with every service and content provider. But there is certainly a fear that I have secretly when having those conversations, that it's a little bit like talking to one of the bike racing teams about the importance of looking for doping in their bike racers. It may be more pervasive than we actually know. And so, you know, the egregious, I find people are really, you know, passionate about, you know, working with us to eliminate egregious and criminal activity. Some of the distorting and transparency of boosting spends of legitimate content, it's definitely a more difficult conversation on that side.
Yeah. Absolutely. On the topic of distributors, Mike, I mean, you guys have a SoundCloud has a distributor with Repost. How has that been fighting this problem from sort of two sides?
It's been a really interesting challenge. It's been complex. No, I'm kidding. If anything, it's interesting to be able to see the whole holistic journey. Because it's in-house, we have a distributor that essentially pushes all the content to other platforms. We also have the ability to see how that, because as we're doing that QC that you just mentioned, from a distribution standpoint, not just a platform standpoint, so we're doing it on two ends, we also see what comes back. And we obviously we know our own platform very well, but we also see what comes back, and there's also activity that we're learning that's happening on other platforms. So when you all reached out to talk, we were excited because there's also, we've had the window into what happens on other platforms and would want to have these conversations. The distribution arm does have those conversations that you just mentioned, but not with open arms. So it actually did feel a little bit isolating, maybe is the right word, where, again, see the problem, we're curbing that problem, but then we see that it's bigger than just us. And I think that distribution aspect was really, it was enlightening in seeing what's going on with all that content that we're also pushing off platform. And also just really interesting to see how different platforms have different DNAs. The type of fan on SoundCloud will be different for an artist on other platforms. So going back to that whole authenticity fandom space too, it's interesting to see just fandom and how different that it's starting to evolve and live on different platforms through that arm, the distribution arm. But yeah, it's complex.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Some of our biggest finds outside of our own systems have been working with distributors and directly getting lists that they have flagged that other DSPs have flagged, and we don't know why. So we have to sort of reverse engineer why we missed it. And I think it would be so much easier to just be like, hey, the bots are doing this now. The bots are moving onto this attack. The bots are moving onto this attack. And not have to sort of reverse engineer every time. So, yeah, that's a great point. Let's see, how much time do we have? Okay, 10:45. So last question, and then we'll get into some Q&A. Want to leave on sort of a good note, a twist on a good note. So, for artists that are being tempted by spin fraud, what advice do you have, and what resources would you recommend they turn to instead? What can an artist do? What can a label do? What can an industry do versus spin fraud?
Listen, Pandora has great tools in the AMP tool set to promote your own content. Make sure that it's being indexed by the ad-supported radio service and eligible for play there, and promote it. So we have excellent tools in place that are frankly underused, even by our largest partners. So there are plenty of legitimate tools out there, but they're not easy shortcuts, and they're not home runs.
And yeah, the not home runs part is important, because I do think part of this problem has been driven by the ads that promise a certain amount of spins. You know, very big on how they get those spins, which we now know are primarily driven by bots. So yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to discern the tools that you can use versus the ones that are just trying to offer something.
And at the end of the day, you risk, you know, if you're using bot activity and bot activity is noticed and the service is stripping out the bot activity, you risk having your legitimate activity stripped out as well. So
all the hard work you're doing elsewhere in your music career could be sidelined.
Yeah, I was going to add, I was like, just don't do it, because if you're saying stripping the activity, but I think, like, you know, artists can lose their place on a platform, and then, you know, having to, like, it's possible to like crawl back and get that account restored. Like that's so much work. Whereas if you had, you know, stayed authentic and built that fan base and build all those numbers authentically, you wouldn't have to kind of fight back the getting removed from a platform. And also what I wanted to mention about artists is like the data doesn't lie. So you were mentioning earlier, like if an artist has, I don't know, thousands of followers on Instagram, but then there's a concert and no one's booking it. That's just weird, because if that person had the fan base that they say they do, why is it not showing up in the other revenue streams?
I finally figured out a way to work in the three laws of thermodynamics into this. So if everyone doesn't know, there's the paraphrasing of the three laws of thermodynamics are: the first law of thermodynamics is shit happens. The second law is shit flows downhill. So the shit flowing downhill is flowing to the artists, literally. Like this is this problem most impacts the artists who are the last people to receive remuneration out of the system. And then the message to the artist is, the third law of thermodynamics is, there is no such thing as a free lunch. So, which is the law of conservation of matter and energy. So there, you know, when you see an advertisement that says, you know, guaranteed amount of spends, it is bullshit. And it's flowing downhill towards you.
And maybe just to quickly add to that is the concept of even having these spins or whatever you're trying to pursue in terms of visibility or vanity or whatever it may be, the new currency in music is community. And to what you're all saying is, if I'm fluffing my plays as an artist or as a roster or whatever it may be, inherently a community will reject you. They'll see that those amount of plays or those likes or follows, even if they're, people can simply look at an Instagram or some other social platform and see you have a low count of people following you, that community, and they'll look at the stream counts and see that they're egregiously high. Someone, your story as an artist is already distorted. People already look at you as being inauthentic.
Yeah, or vice versa.
Or vice versa, exactly. And people are so in tune to these things that it's not like they're researching, it's just an immediate reaction to something like that, that you've already just screwed yourself as an artist, even if you are making very good music. So I think that authenticity is something to lean into, and the tools, there's so many. I mean, SoundCloud, similar. There's a insights tool. You can literally see the people that are streaming you, see their profiles, click through, meet them, thank them. Like that interactivity, that community needs to embrace you in order to find success, even if your success is very rooted in fame, money, whatever it is. Hopefully there's some artistry in there. It really is, you will not be embraced by a community, I feel like, with everything that we were saying, because people just have a gut reaction and just pass.
Yeah. What would be, I guess, one very last question, I'll do a Q&A. What would be your ideal next steps for groups in the industry?
Yeah, I'd love to see broader collaboration. I'd love for other services to join Pandora and Pandora, SiriusXM, and SoundCloud in finding the appropriate information to share, and finding the right way to collaborate. And then in a broader industry sense, we should find the right forum and the right methods to partner with content providers. There's a ton of, blockchain technology is, you know, the hot topic nearly everywhere else. There's obvious applications for creating more integrity in digital autonomous networks. The Web3 technology is designed to create more security and legitimacy. In many ways, there are probably very applicable uses of that technology. But I think the first step is for the stakeholders to all come together and begin, acknowledging the problem openly, talking about what we're doing to fix it, to restore integrity, and then talking about how to best share resources to fight the problem.
And I was going to add, like, from a, I guess, more solutions side, having, you know, entities or streaming services talk to each other, but as well, the more data that we see, like, at Human, we already see, like, 15 trillion interactions a week, you know, 3 billion devices a month. So there's a lot of data that we see. We've seen users come again and again over the last 10 years, and when we have an idea of who the user is, what content they're listening to, we have this ability to do what we call clustering. So understanding, like, is there a specific set of users hitting a specific set of content? And if you can do that, you know, I'm going to say anonymously across, like, a larger pool of data, you can see, you know, you have more visibility. And that's what we've seen in detection, is the more data they have, the more bot profiles you can kind of pick out, because you have more to compare to in terms of baselines versus abnormal behavior.
It's a mass and distributed problem, and the only way that you're going to effectively fight it is if you have a mass and distributed response.
Yeah.
Very well put. All right. Well, thank you all for joining this panel. This has been a wonderful discussion. I guess we'll go ahead and kick it off to some Q&A, unless you have any last thoughts. Okay, great. Yes, hello. Yeah, exactly. I believe just that mic.
Yes, my name is Rémi Bouton. I'm coming from Paris, France. And I want to go back to the subject of user-centric, because it seems that it's really a good solution to limit fraud. And it's also a good solution to for the industry to be more transparent. George was calling for a more transparent industry. What I listen to, I pay to what I listen to. It's fair for the artists, for the public, for the users. In France, the company Deezer tried to convince the French companies to try to implement the system of user-centric. We see that the major and also the big collecting societies seems to be to be against the system. I don't really know why, because it's a simple system. Maybe it's more processing, more machine processing. But the system is really simple. What you pay is the music you listen to. It's very, very simple. So my question is, why isn't it possible for all the industry, the DSPs, the digital music distribution company, the collecting societies, the music companies, the major, to discuss and to find this new way to redistribute the money, because this is big money. Today's many, maybe 70 or 80% of the record business industry. For the artists, there are still a lot of questions, because they are asking, why do I get so little money? So I think it's the problem is not only the fraud. The problem is more global. It's how we redistribute the money to the artist, and to be fair.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead. You mind? Yeah. Great question. Maybe to start with, the industry has built itself on the gamble of streaming for 12 or so years. That coming into this, they needed simplicity. So to do it on a pro rata basis, where the plays drive how you split that pie, it was a simple market share business. And we've been that way since. Technology has surmountably accelerated and progressed, but the economics, not so much, not to meet that technological advancement. So what I mean by that is the business now thrives on this model, at large. Not so much the independent side, and not so much, say, the fan that is a jazz head who lives and breathes jazz, or an EDM person who loves just lives and breathes it, or classical music. Those genres tend to suffer under this model because you can't compete at scale of volume of play. That just that principle alone is enough to adopt user-centric. And the challenge is, how do you move an entire industry off of one now foundational bedrock to a new one, which is the way I architected the model was to actually circumvent that problem. We built it actually side by side. So on my left hand is the current world pro rata model. Everyone, majors, indies, direct creators. And on my right hand is fan-powered royalties, our user-centric model. By doing this, we can move a license between, so we have 160,000 artists that are monetizing directly with SoundCloud on the model. We've moved the license, and we still pay them on the new new model, but they still calculate under the old model to preserve the way others have that. So we had got around the issue that Deezer had. What's even more interesting...
That sounds like a good way to pay over 100% of your royalty pool, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Yes, but we're getting there, and that's part of the process of trying to, you know, scale this mountain. So that's the licensing-based, technical-based kind of workaround. But what's interesting is when people say it's a zero-sum game, what happens? You move the model. Why even do that? Because SoundCloud is paying a group of people, a massive group of artists, on two different models, if you think about it, there's a middle space of risk for SoundCloud. We actually, and it's a year now that we've had launched, we actually pay more money out of pocket, so we're paying more out of that pie because that whole group of independent artists are making more money. Some benefit, barely benefit, some make less, some make more. Some in the multiples in each direction, but we're actually paying that whole 160,000 artists more money under the new model to give you an indication of how it works. And maybe just before I pass it on, I'll just, the per play conversation irks me at this point because we shouldn't be talking about the valuation of that per play. We should be talking about the valuation of fandom and fans and how people lean and live and breathe with music. And I'll give you an example that through the UK parliamentary hearings, we were connected with a lot of musicians in the UK sphere. Childhood dream of mine, I got to meet Portishead and Jeff Barrow. We talked more on this subject. And they had an unreleased song for a cover of ABBA. So they released it under the new model, and they made 500% more royalties in that 1 month than under the old model. And one thing I'll call out, there was one subscriber in Denmark had a subscription to SoundCloud, was sleeping in their account. They weren't using it. They woke up, essentially, not a bot, but they woke up, and they streamed the song once.
And be a very inefficient bot.
It would be very inefficient. But that one play was worth $8.09. So to show the power, it's a very fringe case, but to show the power of simply being fair, and that person decided to pay that amount of money, and they only wanted to play something once. That money should go to that artist in that respect. So it's definitely a big, big, big difference.
We'll have a Stream 2.0. We have Web 3 now.
So I was going to say, SoundCloud has done some clever engineering to make it feasible for them to do user-centric royalties. It is computationally more intensive. It's a more difficult royalty process. I think for them to do it, they have to be continually calculating royalties throughout the month instead of waiting to the end of the royalty period. And it's only on their subscription service. Is that?
It's on both the ad and the subscription.
Yeah. But if you think about how computationally intensive it is on the subscription service, it is vastly more computationally intensive to calculate it on the advertising side. You know, SoundCloud, like Pandora, has a very significant advertising component. I've actually heard a couple of content providers here say that YouTube has now surpassed Spotify as their largest global account. That's obviously a huge amount of advertising revenue. So it is challenging from a computational standpoint, but I think the thing that ultimately, as a service, I would like to see the content that is used most on the service be fairly remunerated. So to me, it's for artists, labels, and publishers to all come together and decide what's the fair way for people to get compensated, we're happy, you know, even though it is computationally more intensive, I'm sure we will figure it out. It's a demand that really must come from the people who make the, who create the content themselves.
And also on fairness, you know, how can we avoid somebody tilting those numbers? That's a good point. Okay, we are at time, but we can do waiting in line for questions. So let's do one, and then we'll be around for anybody else.
George, you mentioned like removing or kind of filtering out bogus content from platforms, but that can kind of be a slippery slope for getting rid of artists who make Muzak or lo-fi beats or something like that. So how? What's your idea of
using? So we're not removing any. First of all, Pandora has some very rigorous curation processes in place in general. And Josiah could probably speak a whole other panel about that. So, you know, things like karaoke and content that we just don't think is appropriate for our platform is not making it through to curation of the catalog. Lo-fi beats and other things. Listen, that's a very important part and diversity that streaming services have enabled and allow. We're completely supportive. The content that's being removed is ones where we actually see legitimate demand activity. Once we've seen something with legitimate activity and we see it coming back in, then we will proactively prevent the content from coming back onto the platform. But we're definitely not trying to disadvantage new and in many ways innovative types of content on the service from legitimate providers.
Yeah, it's less the content and more the way that the content is being accessed. So if the spin activity is bizarre, that's when it starts to set off flags. Less than, you know, what the music is itself. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Really appreciate you coming out on Friday morning and saying hi. Hope you all enjoy the rest of South by Southwest, and thanks to our panelists.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josiah. Thank you.
Thanks.